Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course, yeah. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Get it up.
One of those covers of the Video Store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep, what in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
Well, the other interesting thing, too, I mean, what's one of the first horror stories that, you know, at least when I was growing up, what's one of the first horror stories we hear about? Well, to be honest, it's, you know, a snake presenting itself to this woman, you know, saying don't, you know, she's been told don't eat this apple. This creature comes up to her and, you know, and says, hey, bite the apple. To be honest, it's almost like one of the first horror stories you hear about.
Yeah.
And the consequences that come about of all that. And, you know, I think horror has that element in it. It's the don't bite the apple. You know, don't go into the house. Don't be there at night.
It also completely established, like, snakes as a sign of evil and lizards. Yeah. Like, it now casts an entire species in a light that can never get out of, you know?
Which is so interesting because in so many cultures, they're positive figures. You know, snakes are good omens.
Yeah.
I know in a lot of African religions, snakes are good. But... You know, it's interesting that we pose that, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if some people from the outside looking in would see something like, you know, the Adam and Eve and the apple. You know, some people have perceived that as well. You know, we technically did receive all that knowledge. If we go back to that point, that's how we have everything we have right now. And unfortunately, there's a lot of bad things that come with it because we need to know how to temper it. But at the same time, we have all these concepts of creativity and everything we've made that we love at the same time.
Well, it sets up a nice paradox there of it lets the sort of film genres, but horror probably does it the most, be the sandbox that we get to play with the idea of. When we were created, I mean, that's the, like, if we're going to start looking at all these various things that we're bringing up and we start looking at some constants, it kind of lends credence to an idea of, like, we were created with a potential that maybe was a little too volatile, you know what I mean? It's almost like we had antimatter inside us to a degree. And so, and a lot of religions feature an area where we were given a leg up. Somebody handed us an extra key because the only way to protect whatever the hell everything else exists in, because this is fun. We can wind up in a nice big conspiracy theory conversation.
Oh, yeah.
What is existence really? But whatever existence exists
in... I'm getting there, man.
We are kind of probably a threat if we get too much knowledge. Like, our potential for what we can do is so horrifying to whatever created us that we always had to be, like, reined in and held back and, like, penned in. And then, like, someone like Prometheus comes along and goes, this is how you make fire. And all of a sudden we're like, all right, word, it's time to start, like, declaring war on each other.
Yeah.
And also you fire. We'll make fire from across the country. It'll just be, like, terrible. And that kind of then leads credence to this idea that, like, well, see, look, you gave it to them and now they're blowing each other up with it. You know what I mean? So it's and all of these different various sort of presentations in these different kinds of horror movies are like little micro versions of that. Like even that Truth or Dare movie, you know, it's like, let's take a whole generation that just doesn't give a fuck about rules. They get into a game with the simplest of rules. They'll still not follow the rules. Well, now we gotta up the ante. This demon's gonna make you follow the rules. There has to be a spiritual gatekeeper to keeping that course correct. You know what I mean? And that in itself, stupid movie maybe, but that like conversation could go on for hours right there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of another one of my favorite movies when we're talking about, you know, the idea of, you know, religion and film and taking these. Have you all seen the movie Frailty?
Oh my God, this
is
awesome.
That was a B-Movie Club movie, man.
I just showed this to Carrie a couple weeks ago.
We did. Oh, yeah. Frailty, to me, Frailty is a movie that I think, you know, because there's always this debate, you know, especially, you know, and again, I grew up in a church. I heard this all the time. You know, some group says, no Christian should see this movie at all. Then another group would
say, oh, really? I didn't know it was that.
Every Christian should see this movie. And to be honest, Frailty is one of those where I think it presents, to be honest, the greatest idea of, is this really happening to Bill Paxton's character in that? Is he really seeing, because, you know, the amazing, I mean, besides the fact Bill Paxton's one of the greatest actors that ever was.
May he rest
you
in peace.
Really, oh, I know. But you
so
really.
So sad.
Oh, it is. But you believe. There's that part of you while you're watching that movie going, I believe this guy. I you know, he might be the craziest man alive to some people, but you want to just, there's that tinge in you that goes, but does he really see this? You know, his conviction is really strong. I forgot that we actually showed that in a movie club.
It's great.
Years ago.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton's directorial debut too, right? That was his first film.
Yeah,
and I'm sorry, I could never name anybody Fenton, just because the way
Fenton,
he's a demon. Fenton, he's a demon.
I can't inscribe Otis on my axe. I can't pick up gloves that I find on a tree stump illuminated by a single beam of sunlight in the middle of a barn.
Well,
like,
yeah,
all the elements are there, but it was
Angel
so
doesn't appear to you with flames behind him while you're
working under the car.
So
I'm showing that movie to Carrie, and she's asking a lot of questions, and I'm going, just watch, that's gonna get answered in like 2 seconds. And she kept asking me, like, all right, is this real? Is he really seeing this, or is he just crazy? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not gonna confirm or deny. And then that scene comes along with the angel, and I'm like, alright, yeah, this is all really going on. I'm just gonna throw that out there. like I'm gonna let that one go.
Again, that's another story that I think speaks a lot. Technically it is about, there is a spiritual element to it, but it speaks to the kind of mania that we have right now, with the disease and such. And one of the ones that I put on our list, which has very similar concepts of like, well, we don't actually know if anything's happening, but people are making it real regardless, is Ken Russell's The Devils, which technically doesn't always get grouped into horror, technically, you know, isn't labeled as horror, but it always seems to get grouped in just because of the sheer mania around it. And you know how there's basically, because one nun got a little hot for one priest who'd been stirring up some problems. And also, it's a true story too, and it doesn't even exaggerate much in Ken Russell's version, who is the king of exaggeration. But regardless, you know, how many people, you know, by the end, there's nuns flinging their clothes off, there's a guy, you know, they're setting a priest on fire, you know, they're throwing alligators at each other, all just because there's just this little inkling of belief that gets injected into an extremely susceptible group of people. So really, it hinges on, well, everyone shares this core belief. As soon as we set that off in the slightest, one person believes it, then another person believes it, and it really does spread almost like a virus.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me of the Frank Darabont, when he directed the Stephen King's The Mist.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Marcia Gay Harden's character, who you hate. I mean, you really want to hate her. Until that one moment that I remember watching the movie where I thought was so interesting is when she actually says, if you go out there, you're going to die. And when the people actually go out there and die, the power that she gains at that moment. You honestly, you know, Thomas Jane kind of, he has a look that he gives her that he almost believes like that just gave her the power.
Yeah, it sucks to be the one person realizing what's happening and not being like in a position to do anything about it, because you realize you're outnumbered by all the other people that just had that switch flipped for them, the blind follow switch. And that's the part that's scary, because we have all of these examples of how they turn out to be wrong. You know, the person that you're blindly following usually leads you into demise. And that's it seems that with no one ever takes as a, you know, can we take that away from this movie? He's like, please, starts getting that level, you know.
Yeah, and he sets it up perfectly by saying, you know, the guy that's going to go out there, she says, you're going to go out there and die. And he goes, lady, I believe in the same God you do. I just don't think he's an asshole. And he goes out there, but then... boom, he gets it, you know.
They get his legs back. Setup. That's the guy that pulled his legs back, he looked like Ron Perlman. You're almost like, oh wow, this is cool. A Beauty and the Beast callback, the guy from Alien 4. We're going, all right, this is gonna be good. He's gonna make it to the truck. That guy's gonna come back with a shotgun. No. The Mist was so awesome. And there's an interesting example that just came to my mind that also kind of explores the atheist idea of, like, what if an atheist is thrown into a situation where they now have to deal? This film called Event Horizon, which is a nice, an amazing blending of horror and sci-fi, and that's where, like, the ship goes to hell, and everyone who goes with it gets, like, demolished. But that quick clip we see of the video of what happened to the first crew, and how, let's just say all those scientists didn't believe in religion. There's like a very trope of science versus religion. A lot of times the scientists will be non-believers. Whatever they see when they get to hell, when they beam back or whatever that camera catch, they instantly become like going to a blood orgy. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, we know where we are. We know what to do. Which means underlying that scientific I don't believe in God, there still is that belief in God, right? Because if you get to hell and instantly know where you are, then you're like, oh shit, all right, I guess I was. I did hear something about this.
It's that core concept of being able to recognize that no matter what, we all can agree that we have things we don't understand. And we're all just attaching different things to it.
And is it, it's our, oh, well, go ahead, good. Go first, Ian.
A great moment that highlights that. We're talking about, you know, in quarantine watching some popcorn fun films. I watched Adam Sandler's Little Nicky the other day. And there's that great moment where Tarantino plays that priest and they're all in New York City and they're all supposedly sinning because somebody told them there is no God, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, there most definitely is a hell and you're all going there. And he says that great line, holy shit, we all are gonna die. realization, boom, it hits you. So
it's wild, man. It's wild. It's our need to know, right? We can't. I can't just float around with like there is no explanation, man. Just go and have fun, live the best life you can while you're here. It's all we can tell you. No, dude. Because if even half of what these other people are saying they're reading in these books is true, there should be some kind of indicator. Even a video game has a training level, right? Like, come on. There's got to be some irrefutable thing that we can all go to. And the fact that we're not, that we don't have one that we agree on, is freaking me out. So let's make a whole bunch of movies about it. And be saying, listen, we're happy it's not this. We're happy it's not The Ring, right? We're happy it's not just videotapes being like materialized out of a psychotic mind that then makes you part of her curse or whatever. But even that in itself could become like, didn't they? No. The one that I was thinking of that probably is one that we would overlook might be the Paranormal Activity series.
Yeah.
Because that whole sort of like the witch coven, and like eventually it becomes like a whole cult of demon worshippers trying to bring about the return of this demon with this kid who is proud. There is so much going on that isn't in the actual films. There's so much story there that they don't actually put on film. It's almost like, why the hell did they bother? But part of that is intriguing to me. And I knew that one was to stop us dead in our tracks. So are there areas of religion and spirituality in films, mostly in horror movies, that we haven't touched on yet that are sort of glaringly kind of screaming at us that are definitely going to be a focus of future iterations of our seminar, but that we should mention a few minutes before we go?
Yeah, I have an interesting idea. You know, there's... you know, within the horror genre, I found this kind of interesting. There's some movies that actually focus on the beauty of the horror. And in a weird way, like, sometimes it gets so, like, that people love the beauty of it so much within the movies that it in itself becomes a religion. And, of course, the main one that comes to my mind is Hellraiser.
Oh, yeah, baby. Nice. My second favorite movie of all time, baby.
I mean, you can't tell me that... Clive Barker, that's not a religion. You know, the torture, the love of the torture, the cube, the Pandora's box, that is a religion. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be, you know, Jesus on a cross or, you know, all that stuff, but that is a religion. These people are zealots for the pain.
Yeah. And you know, in the Hellbound Heart, they're not demons. It's just a religious organization. They're just a religious organization that follow around and obviously have some sort of power because they find who opens this box and they technically give them everything they want. It is a religious organization at the core. It's just they brought that extra spiritual element into it in the movie, which, I mean, obviously adds to it. But yeah, I mean, Hellraiser is a great example. Yeah. And Clive Barker is just such a spiritual person entirely that there's not an ounce that doesn't get injected into all of his stories.
I was going to say, it bleeds across his whole sort of universe, right? Because even when you watch a movie like, what's the one with Scott Bakula where he's the detective? Lord of Illusions. It sort of feels like a spinoff of Hellraiser because of the same sort of... slightly dominatrixy, slightly disturbing element of the gore that goes on. You know, like the sort of mask that they trap Nyx in feels very Cenobite-ish. You know, it feels
And there's also people out there that find religion through connection of other human beings and love, and you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we were talking about this the other day. You know, altered states.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's another, you know, literally the moment that he has sex with his wife, she asks him, what do you see? I see God. You know, and there's some there's a beauty within that, you know, you want to say it's a horrific approach to it all. But I also think that's another reason why people have been fascinated by religion for all these years.
Absolutely.
You know, they are fascinated with the horrific snake within the store. You know, Kubrick kind of pointed that out in Clockwork Orange, you know, the part where he's in the jail and he's reading the Bible. Oh, I love the part, especially the old ultra-violence parts of the Bible where people are slinging and cutting off heads and, you know, those stuff.
It's not easy butchering people. It's hard work. You know... there's a lot more like me.
We're talking to serial killers.
Serial killers!
New terminology.
Are criminals born, or are they formed?
How do we get ahead of crazy if we don't know how crazy thinks?
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Welcome to the Hollow Nine Mindhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is David Clone from the Hollow Nine Network, just checking in saying, hey, what's up to all our Radio Haver fans listening to us from all around the globe. We want to thank you for all the live streams during our programming, and a big thanks to Drew Carson for giving us the slot. We've got some renovations going on at the home base at hollow9.com. Pretty soon, it's going to have a whole new look and feel, so just get ready. Until then, keep rocking over at Radio Haver.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code Gold, Command Eyes Only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you were aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there, all right.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie. It's creepy. But then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff. There's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.
Well, I think that could be a religious movie too, A Clockwork Orange. You know, the religion of violence. You know, hello, my brother even says my brethren. You know, in that.
And it's interesting because I think one of the things when we were mentioning Passion of the Christ is that it's sort of what movies lets us do is it lets somebody give their interpretation a really solid, tangible expression, right? So. When we're watching Passion of the Christ and you're thinking, man, this is what the guy, the story that they, you know, if the priest wasn't reading it with brimstone and hellfire in mind, you grew up with this. This is just a really long day in church, man. We're going to hear this whole friggin' story. But when you see, like, flailing and, like, the ripping of his face and, like, and you're just like, yo, you guys did not do that story justice when you were, like, indoctrinating us with it. This is the first time that someone like Mel Gibson can say, like, do you really realize what they're talking about, what somebody went through to die for your sins? Let's look at what that actually, if you were there, probably looked like. You know, I mean, I, as a non-believer, or as sort of like, I guess I keep, like, vacillating between atheism and agnosticism because I just feel like there's too much shit for this all to be an accident, but I'm so pissed at not getting a training level that it's like I'm finding it really hard to latch on to anything. So I just, like, I go, you know, I'm sitting there watching it going, like, okay, there's something really powerful about this. Even if I can't say I 100% believe this is all that happened the way it happened, the message here is pretty intense. Like, just think about somebody being willing, if that they believed they were going through that for us. Like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And that's something that kind of gets glossed over too, I think, when religion becomes a plot twist or a contrivance or something that
belief
is more...
can be injected into reality whether you like it or not. You know, whether or not that is what happened, because so many people have believed it and because so many things have been done about it, you know, whether we like it or not, that has permanently altered the course of history. Yeah. So there is a reality, no matter what, in the action that's come of it.
Wow, so that means that we could also see, I mean, and I like to think of it in terms of whatever species comes along next and finds all of our data and is just trying to make sense of what we were, they could see people who were as fanatical about being a Jedi or a Star Trek fan.
Honestly, yeah.
And they're looking at them in the same light going, whoa, you know, these are devoted, and this is where then you could see people saying that, like, going to Comic-Con is ascribing to idolatry. There's so many layers that this thing can start touching. It's like my mind is starting to, like, tear itself apart. Is there anything that we that we should say about any of the movies that we missed, like or that we talked about? That is there anything burning that we want to get as sort of like a last lightning round here? I'd like to try to keep these to about an hour or so, and then see when we cut them all up what winds up happening. But like, let's kind of think of this as sort of our last go around. Is there anything? I know, Noah, it sounds like you got it right on the tip of your tongue, so I'll let you go first, man.
Yeah, no, and you know, Ian, I was going to bring it up if you hadn't, but you touched on Altered States briefly, which is an incredibly spiritual movie when it comes down to it, all because, you know, it is all about this pursuit for the understanding of what is and what is to be, and ultimately finding out that it just is to be and nothing beyond that. You know, he takes all these drugs, he uses the isolation tanks, which if you haven't done, you gotta try that.
I am so down. I'm like dying to do this.
Oh, they're so cool. But you know,
But
to actually, what's so fascinating about that is that movie, because we just watched that not so long ago, we rewatched it, is that that kind of brings in the concept of, well, if it's not necessarily, you know, whether you can understand if it's spiritual or if it's science, there's still, no matter what, there's unanswered questions that we probably are never going to know the answers to. So by stripping away every distraction around you, by using the isolation tank and with him using the hallucinogens, I think it all comes down to this concept of thinning what we know as reality. And that's what that movie is about. And I think perfectly Altered States kind of encapsulates all those spiritual themes we've just been talking about. Even though it's not necessarily about, you know, some sort of spiritual horror, like, you know, there's demons or anything like that, it's very human, and it comes down to the fact that really the only purpose is to just exist. And somehow by the end of lots of flesh and turning into a Neanderthal, it comes down to that. Which Courtney always gets so mad when that scene comes on. But you know,
I don't love the monkey.
It does take you out a little bit, but it does narrow down to that, I think, truth of really at the end of the day, there's so much we don't understand and we won't understand, so why not just accept that fact?
And use it to make awesome movies and stories and stuff, you know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing that I think with, you know, Frailty, and I remember talking about this once, you know, the one part that really got me with Frailty is the actual ending, where they actually told me, yes. You know, and I always thought that was the one mistake of that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From,
it should have left me going...
Spoilers if you haven't seen it.
You've had your chance, though. It's been
a long
time.
Yeah, sorry, it's been 20-some years. I know, we're still waiting. But, yeah, you know, this idea that, you know, if you just left it where I, as the audience member, am going, I don't know what is true or not. I don't know, you know, because that's what belief structure is anyways. We don't have the ultimate answer. So to Bill Paxton, he might be right or he might be wrong. But at the end, when Bill Paxton said, yes, this actually does. It's actually true. That was the only part where I went, you see, that took me out.
Yeah.
In the weirdest of way, because you finally told me. And I think that's kind of a frustration with religion. If we actually did know, you know, it's the kid that finally, you know, is whining and whining and whining. I want the snack. Give me the snack. Well, here's the snack. Well, they eat it, put it down, and run away. I think people would do that. I agree with you 100% on Altered States and in that idea.
Yeah.
No, and I think going on just like the talking about how like belief, like how much you can put your belief into something. Going back, we quickly talked about Wicker Man, but I want to highlight that again quickly. I love Wicker Man because you have this character, the policeman, who is so sure of his belief to the point that he's just being a dick to these people who really are, you know, for the most part in the beginning, just kind of chilling, just living their lives. They're like, this is what we teach our kids. This is what we believe in. Like, pretty open and, you know, not fighting with him. And he's so rude that by the end,
you know, he deserves it, you feel like, because he's just so sure of his religion, and, well, you know, God's not there to help you. Their God is coming in to help them, using you and your, you know, your profound belief. That's what ends up, you know, killing him. And I think that's just so interesting to see, you know, kind of a more traditional Western religion like Christianity go against, you know, an older pagan religion and lose.
I like it. I think for me, one of the biggest things was all these different portrayals, all these people having their chances to personify what they've, you know, held in their mind, whether they believe it or whether it's just from being around art that has featured characters like Lucifer and all these angels and all these people that are supposed to be just the people that we hear the messages from, for them to actually say, oh, look at what it would be like if there was a guy. You know, like, I think of the Viggo Mortensen Lucifer in The Prophecy, where it was sort of like, oh, that's kind of...
Oh, yeah.
And that's a damn good take on that, man. And, you know, Al Pacino is kind of like that plus a circus clown kind of thing, but it worked for Devil's Eye. You know, and so it was this thing that, like, at first was kind of, like, sleek. It was kind of cool. But then when you have things like Midsommar, or what about, like, a movie like Annihilation, that probably seems a lot more like a sci-fi, but really is kind of looking at, like, the sort of oddity of why our species would, what would happen if something was just going to be changing the math behind it all. I mean, it really messes with your head, and I think it has opened the door, obviously, for all kinds of ways we could take this conversation. Like, we could best portrayals of Lucifer and just do a listicle on that one day. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and best portrayals of hell, best explorations of hell, you know, movies like Seven, where it wasn't overtly about following a religion, but another one where an atheist, a non-believer, has to kind of, like, get at least caught up to be able to operate. Yeah. And so that's kind of another real world exploration. And thank God we got to talk about David Fincher for a second in this. Fight Club, if we want to talk about Fight Club with cults, you know, Fight Club is a good
religion.
One. You know? So definitely lots to talk about with spirituality in not just horror films, but the entire horror universe, the entire film universe. I'm sorry, I'm already getting my stuff twisted, because it's constantly growing and expanding and then coming back into the singularity again. So hopefully we'll all get to report on that and see what it's like to live through that one. And it'll be more exciting than so far the quarantine is. Anything we want to think about or plug? Oh, I did want to say quickly, have you guys watched that show The Outsider on HBO?
We have. Yeah, we just...
And that's another one where religion is kind of crashing headfirst with the modern world and sort of, I guess, more of the pagan religion, but just the idea of sort of like mythology and mythical creatures being based somewhere in truth. And what does that mean for the implications of other
Very
religions and
legend.
Spirituality?
Yeah.
Love that.
You'd like it, Ian. For sure. You'd really enjoy it. And it's Stephen King.
Based on Stephen King.
Well, yeah, I always got to read the books first. You know, as a King fan, I've got to read the book, then I can enjoy the actual rendition of what they changed.
Yeah. I feel like we would have been remiss for it to not have been mentioned somewhere in this opening salvo of the exploration of spirituality in movies. We can go around the tables. Anybody have anything they want to plug, anything they want to shine a spotlight on, anything they want to talk about maybe that they do on the side to earn some cash sometimes? This would be the place in the show where we talk about that stuff. So I'll throw it across the table, and I'll let Noah and Courtney go first, and then Ian, and then I'll wrap it on up.
Yeah, so I mean, I've said before in the last episode, but I was quite selfless on my plug, so I guess now I'll be selfish. I'm a freelance illustrator. Lately been doing a lot of work for independent film companies and Fangoria. My website is N as in Noah, C Meihoff, that's MEIHOFF.com, and then all my handles on social media are the same, NC Meihoff. You'll see a big skull, a big gold skull, and that's how you find it. And while I'm there, just because I was rearranging some of the stuff on my site earlier, I'd like to plug a film of a friend of mine who I worked with recently. So Rocco Zevenbergen is a friend of mine, a collaborator as well. He just finished up his first feature under his own little film company a very DIY, bad taste video. And his movie's called I Need You Dead. I just finished up the one sheet for it. I did the poster and I helped design the main creature in it. So that's something that I think is going to be a lot of fun. It just premiered at the Hollywood Theater in Portland, luckily right before all the theaters were getting shut down. But be on the lookout for Bad Taste Video, because that movie's going to be coming out before you know it. So check out I Need You Dead from Bad Taste Video.
Hell yeah, we got to watch that. We'll do a watch party. Can we do something like that?
I don't
know.
Can we set something like that up? I don't know when it's coming out, but I can talk to Rocco about it. And,
yeah, see if
we'll
get some. We'll set up the couches over here at the Hollow Nine headquarters, and we'll all sit back and social distance ourselves and watch it over virtual channels together.
I'm gonna plug the same thing I did last time. I kind of co-host on a podcast called Not Having It All that's run by Karis Rian, who is the founder and leader of Rian Pictures, a female-focused film company out of the UK, and we talk about all sorts of different stuff. We're recording one tomorrow about comfort films to comfort us through these trying times, so check them out. Spotify, Apple Music, and on rianpictures.com.
Sweet. Nice. Ian? What's up? What's going on with you?
Well, I just, I don't have anything to plug, but I got to share a fun story. So, like most of the world today, I decided to go to the grocery store and do some little apocalyptic, storage of everything. Was able to find toilet paper. So that.
Oh, lucky you.
Aren't I there? I tell you what, that stuff's gold, people. Protect that. But I was in this. I'm in the aisle, and it's like we've all seen it. It really was just shelves just bare. Little things here and there, and I'm sitting there in the Kool-Aid aisle, and there's music playing as it always is in grocery stores, and all of a sudden I'm sitting in the Kool-Aid aisle, and Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House comes on the speakers.
The Stand.
The Stand moment. The moment in The Stand where the world's just everybody's dead.
So awesome. Don't dream
it's over. And a guy across the aisle, he and I look, we are laughing hysterically because we both know that moment. And just as a shout out to how cool he is, through connections, I've been able to connect with Mick Garris, the director of The Stand.
What? That's awesome, dude. That's
and
so awesome.
He was at Marcon. I sent that story to Mick Garris, and he loved it. So just a shout out to Mick Garris for creating such a great moment, and a shout out to that other guy who made such a surreal moment. We needed that laugh right then and there. It just was hilarious. So I had
and
show.
I want I to an- I want to announce we'll immediately be doing a podcast about Mick Garris's The Stand, and we would love if you would love to come on and chat with us about it. So let's make that happen, folks. Hashtag we need Mick. That's awesome, dude. I love that movie. Oh man. All right, well, this has been another day with the gang over the Hollow Nine Network on the What Am I Watching podcast. This is the first in our ongoing learning seminar about spirituality in films, which you can hear us at all times at hollow9.com. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast, on Facebook with Hollow Nine Network, and where else? Oh, hollow9podcast@gmail.com. And we are actually hard at work redesigning our web presence, what we're going to be calling our web experience going forward. So keep your eyes open for that. But until then, you can you'll find yourself at our Podomatic page, and you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, all the places you usually find podcasts. And join in the fun, man. Send us in your favorite moments of spirituality in film that we maybe missed or something, and we can read it on the next one, and maybe you can even join us sometime to be part of the action. So until next time, I want to thank my panel of guests. This has been a blast, and I can't wait to do a whole lot more of this, and I hope you all will come back again, and hope you all out there will come back again and check it out. So thank you guys, and until next time, I'm Dave the Clone from the Hollow Nine Network.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, I-N-E. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys had created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Wow. Love
it. And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, it's wow. Carmen Electra.
Hey, hey,
wow,
hey,
we so are all nice giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra,
absolutely.
Be well.
Safe. Thank you so much. Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't
happened.
See it on radio, but
oh,
she's
my
still
God.
Got it.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
My wife
still
right
got
my
it.
My wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does it. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. That's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did a lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table, and I got to take her all around.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit
sure.
so I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep
all right.
an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific
oh, really?
And
oh.
sound in here with you.
Cool. Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it... Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We got to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey, you know. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still
okay.
friends. That's good.
So we're all good, yeah. Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector Della Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan's Heads. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember those films.
Oh my God. Those movies, I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
No
like,
triumphant.
I want to go back my $2, man. Right?
I have walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic. Oh. But of course, I'm
we
never
need some language
so.
Lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Nine Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.